absolutely anybody mm-hmm. can come and do any of these things. A colleague of mine calls community college like the Statue of Liberty of education, you know. Come on. It doesn't matter who you are or where you're going. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where you think you want to go. We'll be right with you.
Everybody, and welcome back to Hustlin' in Heels podcast. I am Stacy, your host, and
I'm Angie, your co-host.
She was ready.
Nailed it that time, you guys. Nailed it. 1 out of 10, and I am golden.
I even waited for her to drink a little bit of wine because I was like, man, I'm gonna say it. She's not gonna be ready. This is all just gonna happen again. But she was ready.
Fooled you.
Yeah, you did.
Typical co-host fashion. Na 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 boo boo.
That is right. That's how we're starting this off here tonight. So, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you bringing us into wherever you are. Maybe you're driving around. Maybe you're getting ready in the morning. Maybe you have little children running around your feet right now. If so, just turn up the volume, tune them out. It's fine. It's what I do. And we appreciate you joining us. So, just a quick plug for our social media. If you haven't followed us yet on Facebook, we're at Hustlin' in Heels Pod. If you haven't followed us on Instagram or Twitter, we're on HIH Pod on both platforms. If you would like to reach out to us by email, either shoot us a message about maybe a possible guest that you think would be a great fit for our show, or even just to suggest some topics, shoot us an email at letschat@hihpod.com. So enough about the housekeeping. Let's talk about the wine. So, of course, we have two different kinds here tonight because one is dry and one is sweet. The dry one, obviously the one I'm drinking, is from St. Julien, and it is a Red Blend Reserve Cap Drain number 2. That is the longest title of wine that I think I have talked about on here. And it's really a blend. It has some Cap Franc in it, some Merlot, some Chambersin, some Chancellor. Hope I'm saying that right. And we stopped by St. Julien the other day and did a little bit of wine tasting. And I picked up this bottle because it's just a really great dry red. So if you're in the area, St. Julien is located in Pawpaw, and they have a tasting room right downtown. They have fantastic pours there. I know there's a fancy word for them, but that's what I'm going to call them here tonight. And pick yourself up a bottle. Now, the other one that we have in here, Ange, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, it's also from St. Julien. The Sparkling Moscato,
mm-hmm.
and I actually really like it. Stacy picked this up for me specifically mm-hmm. because she knew I wasn't going to drink her dry stuff, and I totally appreciate that. But this is the first sparkling, I think, that mm-hmm. I've had since we've been here, and it's the only thing you guys really need to know is yum. It's really good. So if you like sweet and you like sparkly, this is your thing.
And I'm pretty sure the Moscato is so popular that you can actually buy that one in store. So you don't even have to get that one up at the tasting room. I've seen that at Meijer. But if you're from Michigan, you call it Meijer's with an S. I know that's not how it reads on the sign, but that's the appropriate way.
And I love the label. It's a full moon over the lake, and mm-hmm. it's absolutely beautiful, a little whimsical, just like the sparkly wine.
I love it.
It's fantastic.
I love it. Even better in a Hustlin' in Heels wine glass.
Yes.
Yeah.
Always.
Sure. So that's the wine that we're drinking. If you're looking for a recommendation this weekend, we would recommend either, and the folks at St. Julien know what they're doing, and it's an awesome tasting room. You should check it out. All right. Now, let's introduce our guest here tonight. Yeah. Now, I will say that I have been admiring this woman from afar for years, and I have tried to get her on my podcast, and she luckily agreed to do so and is joining us here tonight. Not only is she a leader in our community, but in the field of education, and she is a true crusader for affordable education and accessible education. And as a former teacher, that's something that's near and dear to my heart. So she serves as the vice president for student engagement and support at Lake Michigan College, which is the very first college that I took my very first college class at back in 1998 at the Bertrand Crossing campus. So I am honored to have Miss Barbara Craig here with us tonight. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes. I'm honored to see how you're just shining and growing after that Lake Michigan College education.
It's the lake effect, right?
On the rest of your life, sister.
At the time, right? So I was in high school and I really wanted to go to U of M. Now I'm a Notre Dame fan now. But back then I really wanted to go to U of M. And so I applied there. I was super excited, but I was 16 years old. And I remember my dad sent me down and he said, I know that you want to go there, but you're not. Mm-hmm. You're going to stay close to home. And I think Lake Michigan College is a great choice because you're going to get a quality education at a very affordable price. And back then I remember being like, ugh. Okay, fine. But now, looking back, I mean, it really was a great education at an affordable price. I didn't have to pay an arm and a leg for the same type of classes that I was going to get at a four-year university, and then left there and went to Grand Valley. So it worked.
Everything went well for you,
didn't it? Everything went well. So let's talk about you, though, Miss Barbara Craig. So, it's been a few years, so I can't even remember. Oh, no, I do remember how I met you. So I attended a luncheon at Lake Michigan College back when I was a real estate agent. And I remember I worked for D Model Realty and Dorothy said, we're going to this luncheon. Barbara Craig's going to be there. We love Barbara Craig. We are going to support her. And I was like, okay, that sounds cool. And I get there and there's Barbara Craig, who has, obviously, what's the first thing you notice about her? This amazing accent, right? And I'm like, okay, she sounds interesting, but everyone with an accent sounds interesting. Let's see what she really talks about. Let's see if there's really some substance behind that voice. And she started talking and I was like, oh yeah, like she's got it going on. Like she knows what she's doing. And so I was just impressed by you back then and like the way that you lead your team and the reputation you have in our community. So
that's very nice of you. I can tell I'm gonna have to drink a lot.
We have plenty. We have plenty.
All right. So I've talked enough. Let's talk a little bit about you. So tell us about your background. Let's start there. So you're not from here originally.
I'm not from here originally. And I apologize to all of those people who've heard this story 1,000 times before, but this wasn't part of my plan. I'm mm-hmm. supposed to be a tour guide in Paris.
There's still time.
I am, right? Maybe still. But I was the first person in my family ever to go to university. In fact, my dad had an 8th grade education and my mom had a 10th grade education. Most people in my family left school at 10th grade. And I just liked school, particularly I liked French. And I would like sneak my textbooks under the covers at night so I could read when it was supposed to be bedtime. And I loved it. And so I just wanted to carry on with it. Next thing you end up at university. Weirdest thing. I can talk about that if you like, because it's such a foreign experience for me. So I always have that in mind when I'm thinking about what's going on in the minds of our students. And because I was studying French and German, I needed to have a year abroad. And when I went to my year abroad in Germany, I went to this language school. And the language school was teaching a class on how to learn German if you're a foreigner. And because it's Germany, there's a bar in the school. And so in the bar, I met one of my English friends who was taking this class. And next to him was this American guy from Michigan. And so, yeah, so now I'm here. Really, the short part.
So the American guy from Michigan you married?
Turns out, yeah. So we've been married since 1991. How long is that? It's a long time.
That is the best story.
Years. And it's so cool, isn't it? It never was planned. I certainly never thought I would be coming to America. But we were married and we lived in Europe for a few years. And he didn't really love it very much. And I, of course, hated leaving my family. And so we said, let's just go live in America for a couple of years. And I said, okay. And that was in 1994. and here we still are. So
got him. And this tricked him, didn't you?
Right.
Or he tricked you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I tricked you. Right. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. And I didn't think that we would be here for very long. But I started, as soon as I got my green card, thank you, Fred Upton's office, for helping me through that process. as soon as I got my green card, I just went to work and sort of marching up and down. I couldn't drive, by the way. It's so funny because I'd always had You've been a city girl. You know what it's like.
Yeah.
I always had a bus stop right outside my house and 24-hour public transportation. So I never needed to know to drive until I was mid-20s. So I finally got my green card and I can finally go to work in Southwest Michigan. I've got my little suit and my little briefcase and I go, right, I'm going to take these temping agencies by storm, you know? And I'm trying to walk down Niles Avenue in St. Joe where there's no sidewalks. You know, it's just ridiculous. And people are looking at me like I'm like some weirdo. So I did the tour at all the different temping agencies, and Lake Michigan College was looking for a 2-week temp to fill in for the secretary of the Dean of Arts and Sciences. So I started working at the college. We didn't have community colleges at the time in England. I didn't really know what it was, but man, I love the idea straight away. You know, it's all about, you know, it's here for everybody. And so it wasn't long before, so I got a full-time job there, and then I started selling education for a living to these, you know, young and vulnerable Buchanan High School girls who needed an education and weren't sure where to get it. You know, I loved being working with high school students and helping them make college decisions. And then after a while, I was done selling and I wanted to really start helping people. So then I started advising students and helping them really go from start to finish. That was right when we'd opened the Niles campus. And that's what Stacey doesn't say. And I actually, last time I saw you, I said I wasn't going to tell this story again because I say it every time I see you. But you mentioned it. So here we go.
There we go.
So we opened the Niles campus in 1998. Stacey was one of the first graduates from the Bertrand Crossing campus. Yep. It's so exciting to think, you know, the college had been teaching classes in South County since the 60s, but we finally had our building and we were so proud of it. And she did amazing things. She was a work study and she worked in the foundation office. And so she was part of all of the big fundraisers and everything. She did a super job. She just was a great student. So I'm glad you chose Michigan College.
Did you pull my transcripts? Actually, they were good, 4.0.
That's exactly right.
Which does not surprise me at all because you're an overachiever you just don't fail, right?
I loved LMC. Yeah. I loved the whole experience. You know, half of the people there I'd gone to high school with. So, you know, it wasn't scary because it was just 20 minutes away, you know, we had fantastic instructors. We had just a great campus. So, and we'll get in a little bit more to that about what LMC is, but I want to backtrack a little bit and I want to talk about where you grew up and what growing up was like for you, because we really like to get an idea of the folks who are on our show, what made them. You know, what made you into who you are today? So talk a little bit about growing up and where you came from.
What inspired you to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I've always been, will always be a journey girl rather than a destination girl too. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's all about learning the experiences along the way. And I think that's really just been one of my prime motivators. But I was born and raised in a town just outside of Oxford, England, which is just a really absolutely gorgeous, beautiful medieval town that is also incredibly modern. Got just a really loving family. It was always really clear that there was love in our house. There might not have been money. My mum and dad were kind of a bit hippie-ish. We did demolition derby, very blue collar, you know, just kind of a bit wild and crazy. But there was so much love from my mum and dad, from my brothers and I. And yeah, I was pretty happy. I thought I was just going to be there the rest of my life or, you know, do a little European experience and then and end up back home. And so my mom always worked really hard. The cool story about my mom is she was the only girl and there were four boys. And it was always expected that the four boys would take on the family business. And it was never expected that she would. It was always expected that she would just get married, have babies. So there wasn't really any point. Her older brother got, you know, a more formal grammar school education, but it was never expected of her. And the boys, her brothers, sure enough, carried on in my grandfather's footsteps with a sort of a garden supply company that they had. And my mom married this boy that she fell in love with when she was 13. And he came to drive truck for the company. So it was obvious, you know, There's Jill's family. She's, you know, this is the support person. She's the secretary. She's the one who answers the phones. and the boys were the big businessmen, and it always stuck in her craw a little bit. And when I was 12, she said, we've had enough of this now. I'm going to have my own business. So she bought a little corner grocery store in Oxford. And so that's where I learned to work. I was 12 years old and we had a store. And so on Saturday morning, your friends might be sleeping in, but you are going to get the carrots and the potatoes all lined up outside the store and you're going to start getting all the boxes ready. And so there was always work, but there was always love and there was always fun. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, I've been working since then. That's a long time I've been working.
That is, well, yeah. And do you credit that with your work ethic today?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. And then my mom went on to a series of other businesses. She sort of started at the beginning of this small parcel delivery business. So she would be bounding around. She's not a small woman. She'd be bounding around the countryside, driving truck, delivering who knows what, wine and chickens and boxes. I mean, and she...
The original Amazon.
She was. Yeah. She was prime time. She was Amazon Prime, my mom was. and my brother got involved in the company as well. And so they just always, just worked really hard. And
I am so inspired over here right now, like listening to this conversation and how inspiring that she had the wherewithal to finally be like, I'm not okay with this. Yeah. Like, I love you all and I am so happy that you guys are succeeding, but like, I want my own.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make it happen and I'm bringing my daughter along with me so that she can create that success for herself. So amazing.
It's such a cool story.
Like, that's just amazing.
She is amazing. And so, we sold the shop after a while and she went into the parcel business. And then eventually, you know, she got to a certain point where she said, you know, I need a quieter, more stable life. And so she went back to working accounts payable or accounts receivable for a large company. And she pulled this, you know, 8-to-5 job for the last few years of her working life. And it was really funny because she was just sort of a peon doing the paperwork. But you could tell she had management's respect because she understood how the business was supposed to be run, right? Yeah. So she wouldn't put up with any of that nonsense about, you know, bitching and moaning about the company. She would say, no, you need to see it from their side, you know. But it was really weird because when that was going on, I'd already been in America long enough that restroom for me meant bathroom. And she would say to me, you should hear some of the things they say in the restroom. I'm like, really? Because it means break room.
I was just going to ask, what does restroom mean over there?
And she's telling me all about these antics they get up to in their restroom. I'm like, don't say those stories in America, Mom, because people think they're really weird. But they would have a good time. So yeah, and now she's been equally amazing because my dad just died of cancer just a few weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so she's been a brave old cookie all by herself right now, too.
Goodness, is she still over there?
Yeah. Ask me when I'm going.
Yes.
Probably the 26th of December.
When are you going? Could you bring her over here so we can go have lunch with her and talk?
We'll totally do that. She would love that.
I would love to meet her.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
100%.
Yeah, she's cool.
Oh my goodness.
She'll be here in springtime. I think she said she'll be ready to make the trip that she's been making with him by her side for the past 25 years. Mm-hmm. It's pretty, everything's so emotionally charged at the moment.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay, cheers.
So,
cheers. Absolutely. I feel like I need to pour you more wine now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Goodness.
So, we will drink to that and we will drink to what sounds like your father. Can we talk a little bit about him?
Sure.
Okay. So they fell in love at 13. He started driving truck. What role did he play when your mom said, we're going on our own?
He went, okay. He's really quiet, you know, really quiet and soft-spoken, but and simple, but strong like bull. That's what we always say about my dad. My dad's just strong like bull. And if you ever got on the wrong side of him, he would have this super extender arm that would find you wherever you were, you know. No, but he was always absolutely supportive. Through thick and thin, he stood by it. It was so cool. Oh,
did that provide what type of foundation did that provide for you? Not only with your life, but and then with your marriage later.
Yeah, that it's a partnership, that it's absolutely a partnership. And you each bring your strengths and one person might do the drains and the garbage and one person might do the money and the cooking. You know, it's just that you're in it together. And so, yeah, I'm lucky I got that too with, my old man.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any, when you think back about him, what were some of his qualities that just made him him, you know, that you loved about him?
That he could absolutely fix anything. So it's really fun. My brothers and I just went through this, you know, emotional journey as we were getting ready to tell the story of my dad. And that seemed to come up again and again, mm-hmm. that you could just give him anything. And he could fix it. He would bodge it together. You know what I mean? He'd find out something. Like there might be something broken over here. And he'd say, Stacey, give me that cork.
Yeah.
Give me that wine cork. And he would, you know, just make something out of it. And the problem would be fixed, whatever it was. And so when I came home after losing my dad, my screen door broke. And so that sort of made me cry because where's my dad to fix my screen door? Mm-hmm. So it was kind of cool because I went, okay, Dad. How are we going to do this?
Yes.
You know, and I went and found a screw that he probably would have found from somewhere. Uh-huh. And I went, yeah, look, we did it together. And he, you know, I kind of summoned him a little bit.
I love that. Well, you know, dads are fixers.
Yeah, he absolutely was a fixer. Yeah.
I love that. Well, so you said, you kind of mentioned a little bit about going to university.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that. What's that like? What was that like for you?
All right, I'm doing a disclaimer because I do education publicly for a living, right? But so I was a crazy student. Oh, my gosh. And it's partly because it was such a weird thing. We've been spending lots of time recently talking about what it's like to be a first-generation student. And you arrive on campus and it looks like everybody knows exactly what they're doing.
Yep.
And everybody's got this all figured out. And I was completely in culture shock, completely. It didn't help that I chose to go to the University of London. So not only was I away from home for the first time, in university for the first time, I was in the middle of the center of the universe, frankly. You know, so there's all this stuff going on. And being a journey, not a destination person, I decided that I needed to experience as much of it as I can, which meant I didn't see very many of my Friday at 9 o'clock in the morning lectures.
You know, it's just a different version of experiential education, really.
I believe that. Yes.
Yeah. I also didn't see very many of my 8 a.m. classes.
I don't think we should do 8 a.m. classes,
I'm pretty sure I dropped the majority of mine. I'm just going to get honest here, ladies.
I actually had, I'm sure you know him, Brian Pruitt, who I grew up with. We went to the same daycare. We graduated from Buchanan the same year. We went to Grand Valley. We were both history majors. Brian Pruitt, I'm pretty confident, never missed a college class. Well, we had a lot of the same classes together, and he took fantastic notes. So he would take notes. I would, you know, I was sick or something, you know, on that day. And then he would let me use his notes. And then later we end up teaching back at our same high school. We're both history teachers at our high school. And I remember saying to him, Brian, I'm only here because of you, buddy. Like, you got me here. You got your notes help me then pass those tests to get my degree. So I'm indebted to, I owe him for the rest of my life. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I feel you with that. So was it 4 years there? Is that the same
bachelor's
type idea?
At the time in England are 3 years, but because mine was modern language and you had to do a year out, by the time I got back from my year out, all my friends had gone, they'd all graduated. So that was good. Unfortunately, by that time, I'd met this American guy. So
those Americans.
So I spent most of my time on the phone with him, frankly. But yeah, it was a wonderful experience. Just having your mind blown on a daily basis. So I studied French and German, which was really sort of literature based. And so it wasn't just an exploration of the language and the culture. You're doing history and you're doing, you know, political science. I loved every second of it.
You move here. Talk a little bit about the culture shock that I'm sure happened when you moved here in the early 90s.
So I'm 50, right? So when I was 10, a movie called Grease came out. So that's what we thought America was. We thought America was Grease and poodle skirts and drive-in movies and all of that. But then we got this, you know, at the same time, it's the 80s, and then there's Desperately Seeking Susan, and there's New York, and there's leather jackets and Madonna and all of that. And so I was very conscious that what I'd moved to was a much more like Grease than like Desperately Seeking Susan. You know what I mean?
It just,
I was totally bowled over by just how incredibly kind and nice most people were. You know what I mean?
Well,
and
that's so nice to hear. Well, it is the Midwest, so that's right, good. But that's right, nice to hear, because that's not always the perception, right, of Americans.
So, you know, I mean, if I've had a struggle over the past 20-something years, it's only ever been because I miss my family and because England's cool. Mm-hmm. And because because I prefer being in a bigger city. I always thought I'd end up in a big city. So to be in a smaller town, you know, it was sometimes rough. But I think being at the college totally saved me, because there's some expert in something wherever you are. You know, mm-hmm, there's always fascinating things going on. So that's always been really good. But no, really, you know, you can, the sophisticated salons of London or whatever, and the fancy pub, mm-hmm, culture, it's all about being sort of witty and cool. And that doesn't wash around here. I learned very quickly, mm-hmm, not to be using those $50 words, because we, yeah, don't care much for those $50 words. We don't really care much what you say at all, but what is it that you do? Mm-hmm. So then I come to this community where people, Buchan is a really good example. You know, if somebody's dog goes missing, the town goes on a hunt. Somebody's, yes, yeah, house catches fire. It's amazing what happens. You know, yep, I just, yes, seen just millions of examples of true common decency and humanity of people, mm-hmm, just taking care of each other.
Yeah, sticking together, taking care of your neighbors. I think that's definitely a, mm-hmm, theme in this area. But that's very interesting that you talk about how, because you probably had to learn different social norms very quickly.
Right.
And pick up on those. Do you have any stories of when you thought this was kind of the norm and then you realize, like, oh, like that
really
doesn't fly
that
here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there are words that you can say that get you in trouble sometimes. I'm pretty good at a double entendre when I don't really mean to sometimes. that happens quite a lot. But yeah, I kind of smirk because I don't mean to be disrespectful, but, mm-hmm, where I come from, country music is not a really very cool thing. And so I had to learn to not make fun of people who like country music. And I love, don't, uh-huh, get me wrong, my dad was one of those British lorry drivers that thinks he's a cowboy. You know, he would wear a Stetson and we'd listen to Charlie Pride and Johnny Cash when I was growing up. I loved that stuff. But modern country music was always just something I had a hard time getting myself, uh-huh, around. But that's okay. But I had to learn that was pretty offensive to make fun of country music, because people really like country music around here. Even,
they do.
Even my
we
nephews
do.
That live in Chicago, the, yeah, big city boys. They have country girls shaking it for them too.
Yes, yes, yeah. Save a horse, ride a cowboy. Yes. Yeah. So, what about the whole idea of bonfires? Is that something that happened where you were from?
Bonfires? What do you mean?
Like campfires? Like, you know, around here, like that's what we do. That's what we did. You know, we'd listen to country music.
Chilly,
we'd be out in the
nights.
Woods.
Yeah.
We'd have a fire.
Yeah. See, no, not at all. No, that's all really weird. That's all really strange stuff for me. But I get it. Uh-huh. I love it. Right.
Yeah.
Tailgating American,
yes,
football. I still,
oh,
don't,
yes,
understand it. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I can't,
it's fine.
Find
we
the
don't
ball.
Understand soccer.
I lose the ball all the time. Yes.
Yeah.
But it took me a long time to realize what tailgating was all about. And I see what a cool thing that is.
Tailgating has nothing to do with football.
Yeah,
I mean, it really,
right,
doesn't. It's,
right,
more about the bonding and the camaraderie and a good excuse to drink,
right,
more.
Well, and the food.
I mean, really.
Uh-huh. The appetite. I like,
oh, yeah.
So, and that's when I would have friends visit from England originally. And they, in the first early years, and they would want to just go for a drink. Not that we're massive alcoholics or anything, but so there's a sort of pretty decent pub culture, mm-hmm, where I come from. And they were like, can we go to a pub where there isn't any food, please? I'm like, no, you can't. There is no place.
Wait,
like
there's pubs with no food?
Right. I mean, now of course everything's all sort of multicultural,
okay,
and you can get food in most places now. And in fact, ironically, that's serving dinner has been the savior of the English pub culture. But but yeah, my friends were like, please. The smell of those fries is putting off my beer. Please, can we go somewhere else? Please.
I mean, yeah, you will leave there smelling like an onion ring, but that's just part of it.
Exactly.
It's just part of the charm of
And I think
American
we had
pubs.
The opposite reaction. I mean, like, I live in South Bend, and, mm-hmm, as they put some stuff in, and some of the microbrews and stuff, mm-hmm, really just have kind of snacks.
Just tapas and stuff,
and,
right?
Mm-hmm. Not even.
Oh,
like,
yeah, mm-hmm,
peanuts and popcorn, and, mm-hmm, people are like,
where's
give me
menu?
Some food.
I need,
yeah,
some
I need something,
right,
to start with. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, where are my poppers, say, right?
100%.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't think I could do that.
I know.
Unless I'd eaten before and then I went somewhere.
Right, we need to know ahead of time. Like, if it's just going to be drinks at this place, we need to know that because we need to get our snackies in before.
Yes.
So, all right. So, I actually had never heard the story of how you came to be at LMC. Mm-hmm. So, I love that story that you started as a two-week temp. Mm-hmm. Talk about that process. Like, how, do you sometimes think, like, how did that happen?
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a real American story.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's...
Well, and so yeah, I loved it. I love listening to the stories of the teachers had to say mm-hmm. and that the administrators were talking about and then meeting with the students as well. So, yeah, it was where I was supposed to be, right?
Yeah. So what is it like when you are working with first-generation college students? Because I was a first-generation mm-hmm. college student come to LMC, and it is. It's like a whole new world. You're not even sure what you're supposed to be doing. I remember we had to go and schedule my classes, and I remember my dad and I went, and it was like, okay, all right, we got to pick the degree, we got to like figure out, all right, then we got to take this class and this class. It was just a whole new world. Mm-hmm. So what has been your experience working with first generation college students?
It's changed so much, and you made me think of this earlier when you said about, oh, you know, I don't really, I'm going to go to U of M. You know, mm-hmm. I'm going to do this other thing. I don't want to do this. And we were talking earlier today about how, because I've been there long enough now that we've seen generational shifts, right?
Yeah.
And so, and this Generation Z, the students that we're taking care of now, it's so much, we can just talk so much more straight with them. You know, we used to sort of have to sort of hide this, you know, affordability thing behind its great value.
Yes.
We could never talk about how cheap it was without talking about what a great quality it was, because it was somehow sort of embarrassing. But Generation Z, I think they really don't care. They're like, don't make fun of me. Don't take the mickey, is what we say in England. Don't make fun of me by telling me I need to spend $60,000 a year on an education when I can get something that's just as good for six.
Isn't that amazing?
I think the kids really don't care as much anymore.
I agree with you.
I was actually going to ask that kind of along that same lines, because I feel like back when I was getting ready to go to school, going to like a two-year school, I went to SMC for mm-hmm. a couple mm-hmm. of years or whatever, but took some classes there. But there was a stigma mm-hmm. behind going to a two-year school mm-hmm. as opposed to a four-year mm-hmm. school. And I was curious to know if there was still that stigma with students these days.
I think it still exists, but I think it's because it's familiar, right? Mm-hmm. So people in St. Joe or at Lakeshore or Buchanan or Berrien Springs or in Niles probably don't think that most of all the kids who go to college, of every graduating class, most of them go to community college. Mm-hmm. And we don't talk about it because we're just there, right? We're just this open door. Come see us if you want. We'll always be there for you. We'd love it if you come take classes while you're still in high school, but then come back to us in the summer when you're going off achieving mm-hmm. your dreams. I think that stigma will always exist. And a lot of it is just fortified by parents who just feel in their sort of consumer-driven way that if they spend more money on their kid, they're better parents, right? Mm-hmm. And there are many, many great attributes about the four-year schools. And there are many, many ways in which I'm happy that some students choose to do that. But for every student to realize they don't have to do that. And it isn't, if you don't do that, you're worthless. As long as they can realize that they have options. And as long as we can keep telling the story of how well those first 2 years transfer on, mm-hmm. right? And there's lots of examples of how well that works. And the state of Michigan, the community colleges and the state universities are beginning to really work more closely together to tell the story of how seamless that transition is, you know, to really work on making sure you don't lose any credits if you start out close to home. Mm-hmm. There's still, you know, we still, because of our open door commitment to accessibility, we don't have as high graduation rates as a four-year school, but then they have to be selective about who they let in the first place, you know? One of my favorite mentors in the community college world is a guy called Sandy Shugard, who runs Valencia Community College in Florida. And he always talks about how ridiculous it is that four-year schools boast about how hard it is to get in. And really, you've got so much more to boast about when the people who had patently, probably on the face of every metric, no business being here in the first place, end up going on and being really successful, right? It's like, it's such a challenge to help those who are really unready, first of all, realize they deserve to be there, and then help them realize that they really can learn. And if they just keep going, they can be successful. It's just the most powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that accessibility factor is something, is that something that you talk about when you're talking with students? The fact, I mean, it seems to me like that's something that you're very passionate about,
absolutely,
right? The fact that education at LMC at a community college is accessible to all.
Mm-hmm. You got me after a day of, and we just had a day-long seminar about mm-hmm. this, actually.
Oh, good.
And the lady that was running it, Priya Chaplow, is an Indian immigrant, and she was talking about when she came to America, she was just loved three things: that America has national parks, mm-hmm. that has public libraries, and that has community college. Like this commitment that absolutely anybody mm-hmm. can come and do any of these things. A colleague of mine calls community college like the Statue of Liberty of education, you know, because and I do that a lot myself. I just go, come on, it doesn't matter who you are or where you're going. It mm-hmm. doesn't matter where you think you want to go. We'll be right with you. Mm-hmm. We'll sit with you along the way. And then we will weep tears of joy when you cross the stage in your heels, hustling in your mm-hmm. heels at graduation yeah. as well, because we'll be really proud of you.
Yeah. And I can speak to the validity of that, having been at LMC and then having been in a larger university. There is a much more personalized approach mm-hmm. That if you're young, like I was, or if you're not sure what you want to do, that really kind of gives you a little bit more of a safety net mm-hmm. And lets you learn as you go. And that whole idea, I think, is just, she's right. That's one of the things that makes America, you know, a pretty great place to be because of that accessibility factor. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I hope we always have it. But I mean, at the same time, the industry is changing and we need to make sure that we have good systems in place to make sure we don't drop people along the way, right? I mean, there's this old notion that community college is like a gym. It's a membership. You can just come and use it if you want. And if you don't want, never mind. And that was what my college professors were like. I was playing card games at the back of the lecture hall and they, because they were pretty short-sighted because they were so brilliant, you know, would have their lecture notes right up yeah. against their nose and they didn't know whether I was there or not. And most sure. of the time I really wasn't, you know. And so that doesn't happen to us as much because we're smaller. But I think the mm-hmm. industry of community college is working harder to make sure we have systems in place to help students make the right decisions and help them, you know, prepare when they're coming to a fork in the road about which is the best choice to make. I just think we're becoming more intentional about it. And it's not just because it's the right thing to do, but it's just that's the way the business world has gone. You know, if you're mm-hmm. on Amazon and you're looking at books and they say, well, you might also be interested in this, it makes sense for us to have that kind of mentality
sure.
as well to help people, to, you know, nudge them. We talk about mm-hmm. nudging them quite a lot recently, and hopefully that will help them finish.
Yeah. So was that a goal of community colleges to, I guess, what is the ultimate goal of a community college for a student coming in? What do you want to see from them?
So we need, hopefully, and, mm-hmm. and every different college has their different mission, the different mm-hmm. emphasis that they place on it. I love the fact that we're a community college, so that's pretty important to us too, but that we remain absolutely committed to the fact that anybody can come, that hopefully we can find the right program for them and we can give them good resources so that they're not just learning those specific skills, but they've got a broad enough education that they'll be able to do problem solving and be able to place themselves in any job going mm-hmm. forward. That's the mm-hmm. thing. And it's the same with K-12 educators too. We're training mm-hmm. people for jobs that may not even exist yet, right? So
yeah.
Are we helping them learn to think? Are we helping them grow good habits of mind that will help them be successful learners and successful problem solvers and not go into debt and not be a burden on society? But then, so it's really important. I've been really blessed to have some really good mentors at the college over the years to really recognize the importance of those community partnerships and making sure we're really listening to what it is that business and industry need, that that we know what's coming with K-12, that we're working mm-hmm. together to try and come up with new ideas and make sure that we keep the community vibrant,
yeah.
right? So if it's been proven that 70% of all new jobs by 2025 will need some kind of post-secondary education, then who's going to do it? You know, if we don't have enough people already, unless we sort of build a four-year university in this town and lots of people start moving into town that have post-secondary credentials already, then we have to work with the population that mm-hmm. we have, and many of them aren't ready. So we have to take it seriously and do some hard work and get people excited about what their possibilities yeah. are for the future.
I think one example of how you respond to what the needs are in the community is the creation of the Viticulture College.
Just to that. Exactly.
I mean, that was brilliant. So talk a little bit about that, because for people who aren't familiar in our area, this is a huge success story.
Well, and it was interesting how something can seem accidental and really intentional at the same mm-hmm. time, right? So it's true. We can just keep churning out the same degrees, or we can keep an eye out for the future markets. And we had a brilliant vice president who came to us from Washington, from Walla Walla, Washington. And in Walla Walla, Washington, it was a lumber town that dried up. One day the lumber industry went away and the town is just left destitute. And they have pretty good terroir, whatever it is you say for wine, and they were able to start building a wine industry, and that's what we thought we might like to do here. We're seeing the growth of the wine industry and realizing that it could be an economic driver for mm-hmm. our community. And got a fantastic faculty member, Mike Moyer from Walla Walla, who was so enthusiastic about the potential of the quality of the wines here. Mm-hmm. And it's not about we can win all sorts of prizes. We can get our wine to a place where it could be absolutely internationally renowned. And just that commitment to try and support the industry, knowing that it isn't the guy from I'm gonna get the name wrong, but one of the people who have helped us build the wine center, who is a winemaker and a winery owner himself.
Adam?
No.
Adam McBride from Hickory Creek is a part of the program. He's going to be on here in a couple of weeks.
That's very cool. Okay, so he'll tell you all much, yes. much better yeah. stuff. No, I think it was one of the Coloma people. Just started talking about how if we're in this together, you know, we can really build an industry. We can become a destination.
Yes.
You know, and so I can see it just growing and growing. Yeah. I hope that it is.
The college offers a certification degree program.
Absolutely.
In viticulture.
It's the only one in the state, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You might have to fact check me on that one.
Yeah.
But it's such a cool program because it's part science and it's part marketing, and it's a lot of feel, and it's a lot of sales, and it's pretty artsy, and they mm-hmm. have to really, and they take them from, you know, from the grape all the way to the after sales, you know, just having the students learn every part of the industry. And the wine students themselves are so cool because they're so diverse, you know, some of them already have bachelor's or master's degrees, yeah. and they think they might just like to start this.
Yes.
Others of them just sort of wander by accident into the classroom and go, oh, this looks really good. I think I'll do some of this, you know.
Right.
And then
it's
together,
the wine tasting part.
Exactly. And together they make this wonderful product.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they're pretty tasty.
That's
if
exciting.
You've tried them
yet. I mean, oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, we have the Lake Michigan Shore Wine Trail mm-hmm. with 19 mm-hmm. wineries mm-hmm. in this area. It's booming,
right?
You know, and you guys are filling that educational need to support this growing industry.
Right.
Well, and let's not forget about our southern. I mean, as mm-hmm. you go south, it's not as prevalent, but Indiana has many wineries. Mm-hmm. You go to Fort Wayne and you go a little southern Indiana, and those. The wine trail continues.
Yes.
Right.
So, I mean, it extends all the way down. I'd never heard of this until uh-huh. you guys just brought it up,
yeah.
and I'm ready to sign up for a class.
Yeah.
I know.
At
it's
this
very
point.
Fun.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very
I think
fun.
That's amazing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's cool stuff. And again, just speaks to the progressive nature of community colleges. You know, sometimes there's this perception that it is, right? It's just, we'll always be here for you.
Right.
But there have been so many examples of how community colleges are forward thinking, this being one of them, another one being dorms on campus.
Right.
Responding to that need, I think, is what community colleges do well.
I hope so. We just did a little survey about the economic mm-hmm. impact of community college. That's the only piece of paper I brought in with me because
yes.
I love these numbers so much. So for every dollar that's invested by a student in lifetime earnings, they get $8.50 back. Isn't that cool? I love mm-hmm, that we have this number. So EMC did this study for us. And then state and local taxpayers get, for every dollar that they invest, they get $3.10 back in added taxes and public sector savings, which is really good too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good for society too. This is the one that I love. Somehow these economists can extrapolate that for every dollar that you spend in a community college education, that society gets back $14 in in savings, right? Because those graduates are paying into, you know, the social coffers as well. And they're less likely to do drugs. They're less likely to drop out. They're less likely to need welfare. And they're more likely to be participating members of society. So that every dollar it gives you 14, I think it's just a great number.
Yeah.
So. And the fact that students can leave like Michigan College without being thousands and thousands of dollars in debt. And again, you know, I credit my dad for being forward thinking and not letting me go to a larger university, because I left 2 years of college debt free because it was very affordable, you know, and, what a head start that gave me. Now, did I rack up some loans when I went to 4 year? Yes. You know, but I've since paid them off, but it would have been so much more had I gone on, you know, and being a first generation college student, it wasn't like, I mean, I paid for my college. So my dad and mom helped me for those first 2 years, and they were able to because it was affordable, you know? And so I just think there's a perception out there that you should go to 4 years, but I think it's really important with the rising cost of education to weigh the benefit and cost analysis of that decision. And I can assure students out there, having gone to both, the level of education is similar in both. I mean, I had great professors and great college classes at LMC. I also had great college classes and professors at Grand Valley. And, you know, for like a third, quarter of the price. So
I also appreciate that the two-year schools seem to recognize the need that some students have to work.
Right.
Yes.
And because they're paying for it themselves. So they offer those night classes. They offer the flexibility. Which I really appreciated because I was in that space. You know, I paid for all of my college and I'm still paying for all of my college.
Yeah.
But you know, being able to work and still go to school is something that you usually can't do in a 4 year university. They just don't have that flexibility the way that it does. And so I really, really appreciate that about them too. And I also appreciate it. I took a few years out of high school. I took a few years off. I wanted to work. I wanted to get some life experience. And then I went back and I never felt out of place. I was a little bit older coming into these classes, but I never, ever felt out of place because it was also very diverse, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the younger students would look up to you and they would ask you questions and stuff because they were looking for some advice, and it made you feel a little good. So
it's great. I love that dynamic that goes on in the classroom. I really do think the older students really value the younger students, and vice versa, in such a cool way.
Some of my favorite memories of LMC are learning from folks in there who maybe moms who had three kids at home and were working and coming there for night classes, or retired, you know, men who had worked for 40 years and now they're coming back to get a different degree. So Is that a continual theme, like that multi-generational class diversity?
Absolutely. So did you ever know Ray Ricordati?
No.
You know him? So this is a cool, cool guy from Buchanan who retired from Chicago, really successful construction industry business in Chicago. He's got this cool place in Buchanan. And I just want to take a second to just think of him, because he died unexpectedly when he was right in the throes of having his college degree. And he never did college, was too busy doing other things when he was a kid. And he was really enjoying in his 60s being in with all these 18-year-olds. He was just loving it. And we've got all these Ray Ricordati stories. Like, they would say, but how come you didn't grade, teacher, how come you didn't grade this on a curve? And Ray would say, there's no curve in life, kid. You know, just great stories like that. He just would just never let them, you know, go with getting away with their innocent stuff. You know, he would always teach them the way of life.
Yeah, life lessons.
No slacking.
Exactly.
No slacking.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You get what you put in.
Do you get that feedback from younger students too? That they appreciate
loved it.
That?
Absolutely. Yeah, we had quite a little vigil for Ray when we knew he wasn't going to be with us anymore.
But what an impact he's made.
Yeah,
I mean, I imagine there are many people telling those exact stories.
Yeah, exactly.
So fabulous.
Some really good times. Yeah.
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 So you're obviously passionate about the community college experience. When you go out to talk about this, what's your biggest pitch? I mean, not even that it is a pitch, because it's authentic. You really believe in it. But why are you so passionate about this mission?
Mostly because we have a need, right? We have to address this worker shortfall. We have to have people who have a training. We need to get people some good skills so that they can be successful and everybody can do it. We'll be looking at our mission again, but for the past, I don't know, since 1970 at least, we've had this notion that education is for all those who wish to develop their potential. So if you think you can, you absolutely can. And especially, you know, it is funny because it is sort of like, I've said this a lot over the years, I feel like we're sort of in the butterfly growing business. You know, people are sort of like, they're sort of caterpillars in their thinking. Then they come to college and they just bloom. And it's particularly, they just turn into these butterflies, particularly some women who might be in relationships that have sort of, or they've been busy doing other things. They've been busy taking care of family, and they finally get the courage to pull up one day or to listen to a radio announcement and for it to mean something to them. And they go, you know what? I'm going to do it. Now I'm going to do it. And to sort of work them through their nervousness to get out of the car and into the building in the first place. And then they start having classes, and then they see that they're just as good as these 18-year-olds who seem to know everything, you know. And then the next thing you know, they're graduating, but then also other things happen to them. They realize that they can do things by themselves that never, perhaps they didn't think they could do before. And maybe they didn't need to be in a relationship that they were in before. You know, maybe they could stand on their own two feet. I've seen that happen so many times, it gets you choked up, actually, because you just see. And you do. You're so happy for them when you see they've got, you know, great jobs, and when they go to graduation. It just happened to be wherever you go, right? You see LMC graduates all over the place. So my daughter was getting an x-ray, and oh, there's, I can't remember the lady's name. I think it's Laurie. There's Laurie. I haven't seen you since you were really stressed and you weren't going to make it through that anatomy class. And now look at you. Oh, yeah, I've been doing x-rays since, you know, 19, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they've developed a career for themselves when not so long ago they thought that maybe they couldn't. So that's the big pitch, that doesn't matter where you're going, that if you just try, you absolutely can. And there are people who are interested in helping you be successful.
I love that. I love the accessibility part of it, and just the confidence growing part of it. It's kind of a byproduct, you know? It's not like, that's not what you necessarily have in the brochures.
Right.
But that's what happens.
Yeah, I think that's the most important part of it. And it doesn't, it's not about getting A's, right? And the older students see that in particular, too. If you do what you're supposed to do and you organize your time sufficiently and you make yourself your advocate of your own education, you're going to probably do just fine.
It's not about the destination. It's about the journey.
The journey, right? Yeah.
I mean, really, like you're instilling the way that you've lived your life to some extent.
Keep on learning, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's amazing.
So I know that we have a lot of listeners who are parents, and maybe they have kids who are kind of high school age, thinking about college. I'm sure you sit down with a lot of parents and talk to them. What's your advice to them regarding their student and calming any fears they might have or answering any of those questions? Are there common themes that you tend to talk about with parents?
It's a lot to do with just what feels right, right? So there are lots of resources out there, lots of really good websites that can help you come up with the right questions to ask. There are lots of really good people who can help you do really well on state tests and national exams and things.
Yes, there sure are. Right. Dr. Carlin's Test Prep.
There you go. Right. He's amazing. He does instill confidence with people.
Yes,
there are tricks to this, right? One of the slides we were looking at this conference today was the rich kids who didn't do so well on placement tests still did better with college graduation than the poor kids who did well on placement tests. You know what I'm saying? So it's like the people that are successful are the people who have the resources. So whatever we can do to get the resources to the students, those guys, that's where the playing field gets level. So being a good advocate for yourself and asking questions and saying, please, can you help me get the answer to this because I need to know? And that's really hard for first-generation students to do. It's really hard for students to do when their parents are hovering over them all the time, answering questions.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's real, and we absolutely understand that it's a partnership.
Yep.
But we want to take this time to turn this caterpillar into a butterfly and help students really learn how to advocate for themselves. And a few times, you know, when I've spoken to students over the years, and they realize that their college shopping experience is something that is sort of salivated over by guys in suits in conferences in Chicago. You know, they're saying, what are their college preferences? Where can we get their dollars? You know, just to help them realize that they are consumers in this journey as well, and they need to be in charge of their learning. So helping parents help their students is probably the biggest message to parents. But most of the time, you can tell when a kid's going to be successful because they have the supports already built in at home. You know, having the conversation about college be on the dinner table is something we've talked about this with the Buchanan Promise a lot. It puts the conversation of college as a possibility on the dinner table. So you can be talking about it like it's an expectation.
Yes.
And that makes all the difference. And nearly all of the time, first generation college students are the last generation who are not college students. You know, from then on, the earnings go up.
Absolutely.
For the rest of the trajectory of the family.
Absolutely. I remember, and again, you know, my parents are both successful, but I was still a first-time college student. And it wasn't necessarily let's go on college visits, which college you're going to go to. I remember my college talk was, hey, mom and dad, I want to go to college. Now what? Like, I think I want to go to college. My friends are going to college. I think that's something I want to do. You know, I should do that. Yeah. You know, and I think now, like I think about my kids who are 10, 8, and 4, they're already thinking about it.
Right,
we're
right.
already talking about it. Now, does it help that their dad runs an ACT and SAT prep company? Yes. But you're right. Like, I was a first-generation college student, but now it's expected of my children to go to college versus this was an idea.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
So it sets the course, right?
And I have to put a disclaimer in a little bit too, because I do think just making them more consumer oriented, making them realize that this is a consumer decision for them might make some students decide that they don't need to, right?
And
so that's fine too. Our apprentices, for instance. You know, it's really hard to get them to finish their degrees because, gosh darn it, they're making $30 an hour straight out of high school sometimes, you know? And so, and they've got employers who are helping them get their education, but they're still learning. They're still training for the rest of their life. So my own daughter, you know, she's over this 14-year-old beautiful girl. She's smart as anything, and she can keep up with me through the streets of London just as well. And she's going to be great. But when I've been talking to her about what she wants to do, she, you know, it's going to be her decision. I'm not going to ram anything down her throat, even though there could be free LMC Beatrice.
You know,
but anyway. Yeah.
Her name's Beatrice.
B. Yeah, she's
my
B.
I love that.
She's my B.
That's great. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that there's a resurgence of trade schools, which is, in my opinion, fantastic.
Right.
You know,
right.
When you think about working in a shop, it's not a dirty place anymore where you're there for 30 years and you leave and maybe your health has suffered or what. It's, you know, these are technologically advanced labs, essentially, these days. And looking for kids who want to come and work, but also learn a highly skilled trade. And I think that I think we're probably going to see within the next 10 years just kind of a boom of that industry as well.
I'm going to pull it back a little bit, too. You know, we're talking about making college an expectation and putting it on the dinner table as talk and that sort of thing. But I'm pulling it back a little bit, just thinking about, you know, my mom was a working mother and she worked a couple of jobs, and usually we didn't sit around a dinner table and that wasn't it just wasn't the way of life. And I know that that's, you know, that's the reality for a lot of people. But when it comes to two-year schools, you know, you talk about accessibility, but there's also availability too. So I think that sometimes parents get to a point where they don't put that expectation of college out because of affordability and they don't want their children to get their hopes up or those sorts of things. And two-year schools really bring that possibility to life. And, you know, putting the message out there that you are, I think, puts that in a realm of reality for them. If they approach it in that manner and you're bringing it to them in that manner. And it also provides some support for the child as well. You know, as you go into school, I really think that two-year colleges provide availability, and that a lot of professors have more open door policies than perhaps at 4 years, and they're a little bit more accessible. You can walk in and you can have a conversation like you would sit down with any other teacher in high school or something like that. And so I just want to throw that out there for some of our listeners who maybe are hustling a couple of jobs and aren't able to sit down at a dinner table and those sorts of things. It's still for you, and it can still be a reality for you and your children if that's what they choose to do and that's what they want to do. So
exactly. You yep. guys get yeah. it.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Good stuff all around. So, yeah, I think we covered a lot of ground, didn't we?
We did.
As we normally do.
I really can't wait to sit down with your mother, too. Like, okay. This has been such an amazing fun. Conversation, uh-huh. Yeah, I am so excited.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we'll take her to a pub that has food and beer.
Yes, we will. Uh-huh. There's plenty of them out there.
Exactly.
Well, I thank you, Miss Barbara Craig, yes. for joining us
thank
here
you
this evening. You know, this is, you know, you talk about, like, people ask me sometimes, like, who do you want on your podcast? And Barbara Craig's one of my big gets.
Yes.
So I'm pretty pumped to have her tonight. She has quite the following in Michigan, and for good reason. I think that your passion for the community college movement, for accessible, affordable education is contagious, mm. you know? And I think that there's a reason why you went from two-week temp to vice president of student engagement and support. Mm. I mean, that doesn't just happen. Mm. So cheers to you for doing
cheers,
that. And we appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So final thoughts, Ange?
I don't have a quote tonight.
I know.
I don't. Like, I feel
I
like
either.
I need to do some Googling real quick. But man, this has been such a great, engaging mm-hmm. conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really love the idea of the journey. And I really love that you opened this up with, I didn't have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like it wasn't my plan.
Yeah.
And you know, this might not be a quote, but that's been a theme of ours.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
we're all just kind of winging it
uh-huh.
mm-hmm. and hoping that we land where we should. And I really feel like you're the embodiment of
mm-hmm.
that.
That's
and it's been amazing to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, at some point I saw this church sign. And I say this quite a lot that said, because I was going to be going back to England any second now, right? I'm going
yes,
back.
Right.
And I saw this church sign that said, just bloom where God plants you. And mm-hmm. I went, oh, yeah, I should just do that. And, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, I'll have my babies over here then. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll just get on with life that way. So,
we just,
and you look back and you've got a body of work behind you and you can be proud of it, right?
Yeah.
It makes me think of a country song, believe it or not.
Good for you.
But the lyrics is something to the effect of, you make long plans and you hear God laughing.
Yeah.
That's really
kind of what, like, you make all of these plans, but I mean,
yeah.
you can plan all you want.
Uh-huh.
It's just
uh-huh.
not going to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's fantastic. You bloom while you're planted.
Right? As long as you've got the resources that you need, you can do anything.
Yeah. yeah.
Uh-huh.
I love that.
Cool.
Well,
that's great. I think that's a pretty good place to end it.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. So thanks for joining us tonight. And we hope that you enjoyed the show. We hope that you share it with your friends. And if you want to find out more information about Lake Michigan College, where can they go to find out more info?
LakeMichiganCollege.edu.
Perfect. It's the lake effect.
Mm-hmm. It still is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a great marketing plan. I love it so much. So one of these days, like, I've seen old promotional uh-huh. flyers of, like, people that I know who are in it, you know,
uh-huh.
from like 20 years ago. And it's like, it's good stuff.
You can just get them all on one episode.
I love it. The Lake Michigan effect. So, all right. We will see you next week. If you haven't joined us on our social media, again, it's join us on Facebook and then on all other social media platforms at HH Pod. And like us on Facebook and give us a review on iTunes. Subscribe to us. Tell your friends about it. Tell your mom about it. And we hope that you will join us again next week. See you later, hustlers.
Keep hustling.
Hustlin' in Heels is an NBI Studios production. Your hosts are Stacy Carlin and Angie Crocker. All views and opinions expressed on the show are theirs and theirs alone. Your executive producer is Michael Bussing, and all music and artwork for the show was created by Shane Yoder with PutThemInASong.com. You can follow along with Stacy and Angie on all forms of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HIHpod. You can also send the show an email to letschat@hihpod.com. Feel free to write into the show if you're hustling in heels, tennis shoes, work boots, slippers, socks, or barefoot.